is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming my friend and colleague, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, on the eve of the meeting between President Trump and President Putin in a war in Europe, a war in the Middle East, a potential war around the world. However, the gentlemen are to talk peace in Ukraine. We believe that is the agenda, and we begin with the fact that this is a ceremony that's been going on since at least Dwight David Eisenhower. Jeff and I, in conversation, have discovered that every president except Mr. Johnson met with the effective leader of Russia. That would have been the head of the party, Khrushchev, Brezhnev, etc. Everyone but Mr. Johnson. The ceremony is elaborate, but it always comes to a summit. Mr. Biden met with Vladimir Putin before the invasion of Ukraine. So what are our expectations of the meeting in Alaska? We'll begin with Jeff's opinion of what Mr. Putin wants. What is the maximum or minimum he can accept and go home to the Kremlin a victor? Good evening to you, Jeff. What does Putin want?
Well, Putin wants, first of all, to basically the pocket the successes he's had so far, John. We've made a number of concessions. I mean, consider the fact the United States has said, the Trump administration, there'll be no entry of Ukraine into NATO. Now, furthermore, we've acknowledged Crimea as part of the Russian Federation and seem prepared to do that formally and diplomatically. And Mr. Trump has talked about land swaps, so he's indicated that he's willing to give up territory, that there'll be no U.S. troops to participate in peacekeeping. We've ended Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. And Trump has also talked about removing sanctions and returning Mr. Putin to the G7. So Putin wants to preserve that, certainly. Second of all, he wants to maintain control or take control of Ukraine formally or at least de facto as a satellite. He's talked for years that there is no such thing as Ukraine, that it's all Russian anyway. And he's reiterated that particular comment frequently. In fact, as late as a speech on the 20th of June talked about that. So he certainly wants that, which would mean a replacing of the government in Kyiv, at the least a government that's more amenable to Moscow, and Russia having control of the four provinces that it insists are the Russian Federation as well as Crimea. And last but not least, of course, I think Mr. Putin sees this whole issue as a wedge that he can use to drive between the United States and its European allies. And every Russian leader, John, that I have monitored since I began doing this 50 years ago, the ultimate goal was always to damage, if not destroy, NATO. And that certainly is something Mr. Putin is pursuing and hopes to be able to accomplish. He would like to have those successes now in negotiations that he hasn't acquired yet on the battlefield.
Will Putin accept just the battlefront and not the whole of Zaporizhia and Kherson province? Will he accept just the piece of the Donbass he now owns?
It's a little unclear to me, John, frankly, because things are so opaque in Russia right now. And what I mean by that, we know that they are having difficulties. Some have said this is a war now between, will Ukraine run out of manpower before Russia runs out of steam? We know the Russian economy is suffering. We know they have 9% inflation, 20% interest rates. Labor prices are going up. They're sending out World War II vintage equipment into the battlefield. They've suffered 1 million casualties. They're having more and more difficulty raising forces. I saw today where 20,000 Central Asian migrants have been basically forced into the army and sent to the battlefield to make up for shortfalls in manpower. So we don't know how bad that is going and how much that pressures Mr. Putin, number one. Number two, we don't know what Mr. Trump will do. Mr. Trump threatened additional sanctions on Russia, secondary sanctions on the consumers of Russian oil, which is very, very important to the Russian economy, and whether or not Mr. Trump will go through with that. I think Mr. Putin is betting that he won't because of the concessions I mentioned a moment ago. Mr. Trump has gotten nothing for them. So it's a function of really how bad and how much pressure Putin now feels he's under, number one, and his expectations or the reality that Trump can paint of what the United States is willing to do if Russia doesn't move more vigorously to a ceasefire and the end of the conflict.
What does Kiev want? And we can attach the Europeans. What is the demands or minimum, maximum for Zelensky and his government?
Well, the main thing that the Ukrainians think want is their sovereignty, and they want security guarantees that that sovereignty will be preserved. You know, in diplomacy, John, we used to have a saying, if you're not at the table, you're going to be part of the menu. And again, a concession I believe the United States made was early on in these discussions. It was always described as a trilateral negotiation, Putin, Trump, and Zelensky. But then the United States backed off and conceded, no, it initially would be a bilat, but then later on might well be a trilat. So security guarantees, because the Ukrainians have seen this movie before. You mentioned important meetings of presidents. We left out, if you're a European, is applying to the Ukrainians and the European, and perhaps the most important meeting of a Soviet Russian leader and an American president, and that was Franklin Roosevelt in 1945 at Yalta with Winston Churchill at his side, when the superpowers at the time basically carved up the map of Europe. So the Ukrainians, as well as their European allies, are concerned that this may be an attempt by the United States and Russia to carve up Europe again. And that's why today there was this virtual meeting involving European leaders, Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Trump, as I think European leaders, Mr. Macron, Starmer, Meretz in particular, were trying to make the point that, in fact, that this was a very important, if not critically important, to the future of their of European security architecture. And then finally, the Ukrainians will certainly want the ability to preserve their military, their ability to receive military aid, purchase military equipment. But the security guarantees for them are critical. And this beginning with a ceasefire and then going to negotiations about territory is the method they want. Mr. Putin, of course, wanting those concessions about territory and other things up front prior to a ceasefire.
Does Kiev agree to no NATO?
I think the Ukrainians would be willing to accept that because it's so obviously the handwriting is on the wall. That has been very clearly articulated by the president and by Vice President Vance. So I think for the moment, they will accept that, though they probably will say that that's aspirational. It's out there in the future at an indetermined date. What they will really want, though, is, again, preserving their sovereignty, is their ability to join the European Union. And we all forget, I think, that's in many ways where this all began, back in 2014, where there was an effort for Ukraine to come closer to the European Union. Putin resisted that. And the president of Ukraine at the time, who was a Russian lackey, reversed that effort, which brought on a revolution in Ukraine, which brought on turmoil. And in that chaos, of course, was the opportunity that Putin seized to then occupy Crimea and begin the war in the Donbass, which is still continuing.
Does Europe believe that it can give up Ukraine and no NATO? Does Europe agree with that? Could you tell?
It's hard to tell at this time. I think, again, it's a matter of how you dress that up in terms of not forever, but, you know, very aspirational at a long time into the future, while preserving that ability to join the European Union. Because, you know, absent your ability to do any of those things, not only does that have a negative effect on security guarantees in the NATO case and European Union membership being perhaps a key to economic prosperity, but basically you're giving up very key aspects of your sovereignty. And then the real question is, are you truly a sovereign nation, or are you really just a satellite of the Russian Federation?
Does Europe agree that there must be elections? That Putin wants elections, and he wants Zelensky not to run?
Yeah, I think the way they'll address that is simply to say, under the Constitution in Ukraine, there should be elections. Everyone will accept that once the war is over. And the only reason there haven't been elections is because martial law is instituted, which I understand it is included in the Ukrainian Constitution during periods of conflict and hostilities. They're then overdue an election right now. Once the hostilities end, it would be likely that they would then have elections. Again, I think because of this question of sovereignty, they would not want, you know, Russia to have a veto over who might run for office. But after so many years in office during a conflict, I think Mr. Zelensky may decide he's done the best he can for his country. And we've already seen that there is some political opposition to Mr. Zelensky. And in the aftermath of the war, the Ukrainian people might feel they need a change of leadership anyway.
I'm speaking to Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired CBS News. We're talking about the anticipation of events from the summit in Alaska in these next days. When we come back, what does Mr. Trump seek in Alaska? What is the maximum and minimum he will concede? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.